listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are, ladies and gentlemen, and I am Michael Sterling.
And I'm all out of love, and I'm so lost without you. Yes. How are you?
I'm good on this here Halloween day.
On All Hallows Eve.
Yeah.
Yes, All Hallows Eve day, we should say.
And I love the fact that we're all in costume.
Isn't that a nice thing?
Yeah,
we just tried the whole thing.
I'm surprised that Ann came in costume, and Jim, I figured he probably.
Well, let's tell them, should we tell them who we, well, first, before we tell them who we have, we'd
like
to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most successful, professional, and successful means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Express, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live and arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our weekly live arts calendar.
Joining us in studio today, she was nominated for an Academy Award, a Golden Globe, and the British Academy Award for her role as Michael Douglas's sympathetic, tortured wife, Beth Gallagher, in the legendary thriller Fatal Attraction, but that barely scratches the surface of her inspiring career. We are indeed delighted to have in studio with us today, Miss Ann Archer.
Yeah! Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And she brought all these people with her, which I thought was odd. It's unusual.
Well, they travel with them.
It's like
talk
good
about,
lighting.
Talk about an entourage. It was three buses.
We also, Paul, have joining us in studio a man who spent six successful seasons as Ted Knight's sidekick, Monroe Ficus, on Too Close for Comfort. Cult film fans remember him as the ever-sleepy Prince Valium in the Mel Brooks classic Spaceballs. Here today to talk about revisiting a show he performed on Broadway and on national tour with a slightly different twist, please welcome Jim J. Bullock.
Wow, I got laughter already. I didn't even do anything.
That easy.
It's like a telethon.
But it's just that easy. Thank you both for coming. We're delighted to have you.
Yeah.
And it is unusual, absolutely. I think, that you both came in costume. I think that's a little, you know, it shows some enthusiasm.
Yeah, I think so, too. We appreciate it.
Michael, what are you calling this costume you have on? I'm just trying to judge it from here, looking at the table. It's sort of like it looks like you have a table at your waist.
Right.
And a little, like, alarm clock on the side.
Alarm clock there, yeah.
Little lamp, pack of cigarettes.
Yeah.
What's the deal?
Well, what do you mean, Paul? It's a one-night stand.
It's a one-night stand. Very, very well done. Very well done. I'm a little late with this, but very well done. And, Jim, you're pulling
what?
Off this... Not a big one for the holidays, are you?
No, I love the Halloween. It's a gay Christmas.
Is it?
You know, but I'm, you know, I'm too tired to put out any effort, and I certainly didn't want any makeup on.
No,
so.
No. So this is it's the puffy shirt. It's
this
the puffy
is
shirt
from more... International Mail, which we talked about earlier,
which is now defunct, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, which is no longer.
Okay.
It is the catalog
yes.
right now.
Yes.
It is sort of like the Victoria's Secret for men.
I mean, I assume so. It looks yes. like it belongs.
Account. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's kind of piratey, and I'm going to hand out candy at a friend's house in Sherman Oaks after I leave. Yes,
have they said you were a fool to dream?
Yes, it's an exciting life, folks. It's an exciting life.
Oh no, but that's really a nice look for you. I think you could pull it off. International Mail. Now it is a catalog
yeah.
now.
Well, I mean, it's a store too. I
it was. It there was there. Did you?
And you said it's like.
I think about it. You're like, oh my. But, no, it had like you know. I mean, it was like trashy, hoary stuff, and so it's still
for international mails.
For
like
you know,
Eurotrash.
Yeah,
looking.
Total Euro. Trash, yeah, total yeah. stuff. Like, who would wear this? But I did at one time. I was like 40 pounds lighter.
Only dressing up for
and
radio.
Felt really good about it, you know.
We had, you said it was the gay Victoria's Secret.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we had Chris Meehan on. A great comic was on, and he and his brothers work in San Francisco a lot. They were actually on. Last Comic Standing, and he had a great line. He said, we have so many transsexuals in San Francisco that Victoria's Secret just opened to Big and Tall. So, I'm writing
that's
that one
very
down.
Funny. That's very
and,
funny.
And Miss Archer came dressed as an elegant Oscar nominee, which I think is just
yes.
wonderful, and you pulled it off beautifully.
Yeah, I didn't get the message.
You didn't get the memo? You were supposed
right.
to be sent an email about that.
You class up the place.
Yes.
Don't worry.
Very
don't
much.
Worry.
But we have not set the bar very high, so don't be too complimentary.
Paul,
but delighted to have you.
What happened? What's your week like this week?
My week was good.
Week.
My week was good. You know, just plugging away,
yeah.
working on the stuff. You
yeah.
know, delighted to have a little time to myself. Going to Arizona this weekend to see my dad.
See your dad?
Yeah.
He was just here, though.
Yes, he
you,
was. Yeah. But
nice.
he's in Arizona. He's climbing the walls there.
Yeah.
He's got to get out and do some more. And my family, luckily, has all their power because they are from. In Connecticut, and of course they got pummeled with that snowstorm there.
Oh,
so
right.
My brother doesn't have power, but he has generators. My mother and my sister have their power, but it's just they just you know 2 months after Hurricane Irene, and they're just all sidelined again. And now it's cold, of course.
Yeah, I understand. In New York, quite cold yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, and a foot of snow on everything. Mm-hmm. So we send good thoughts out to the East Coast.
Absolutely.
And we don't tell them what our mom. Weather is because my mother just gets pissed.
I did. I told her.
I don't want to know.
Yeah.
I don't want to know, Paul.
I said, Mom, it's 78. I don't
give a shit. I don't want to know.
See, it's FCC free. But that's my mother. That's the way she talks.
Really?
She just, don't tell me. My mother, I was...
She sounds
I was,
like Edna.
I was begat of Harvey Firestein. A lot of people don't know that. That's my mother is Harvey Firestein.
Oh,
the Merit Ultralight 100s just give the voice that lovely flavor that...
wow.
But she's a doll, and we send good thoughts her way. Shall we get started, Michael, and
yes.
talk to our lovely guests here? Would you please give Miss Archer the introduction she is due?
I will, indeed. Happy to do so. While our first guest might be best known for her starring roles in movies such as the aforementioned Fatal Attraction, as well as Shortcuts, Patriot Games, A Clear and Present Danger, and more, she's also enjoyed great success in the theater, starring in the off-Broadway production of A Couple of White Chicks Sitting Around Talking. Les Liaisons Dangereuses. Did I
Les
say that?
Les Liaisons Dangereuses.
Dangereuses. You see, she says it so much better.
Right.
At Williamstown Theater Festival, The Poison Tree at the Mark Taper Forum, The Vagina Monologues in Los Angeles.
That's Vagina, Michael. Vagina.
VJJ.
She received rave reviews in London's West End for her performance as Mrs. Robinson in The Graduate. She is currently starring in the title role in Jane Fonda in the Court of Public Opinion at the Edgemoor Center for the Arts. Please welcome, once again, Miss Ann Archer.
We had enough of that.
Wow.
Yeah, please.
So Hello. Glad to have you.
How
Thank
are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Delighted to be here.
Good. I know that we're slightly irreverent. And
that's okay by me.
We're quite serious about the arts, though,
uh-huh.
I must tell you. And
well, you are.
I am.
Yes. I am not.
Yes, you are.
You're
yes,
the.
You are.
No. love the Edgemoor Center.
Mm-hmm.
Did a show there. Love the work they do, Michelle Danner, and all that she does in that place. She's co-directing this one, right?
Right.
Along
yes.
with the playwright, right?
Yes, who was my husband, Terry
really?
Castro. Yes, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, how is that working that. With your husband?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah?
He directed me years ago in a production we did of A Couple of White Chicks in L.A. After I'd done it in New York, I did it in L.A. And he's taught acting classes, and you know he's great. And he's directed a bunch of one acts that he's done with other actors. So he's even though he comes originally from the sports world, and you know he's won 7 Emmys, been nominated 20 times in sports broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
he started writing screenplays about 5 years ago, and he actually wrote this originally as a screenplay and realized it would translate better into a theater piece, at least initially, and so. He turned it into a very interesting theater piece, like 12 Angry Men, that concept, you know, of Jane Fonda meeting with, she actually met with 26 vets in Waterbury, Connecticut in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And so we couldn't have 26 vets on the stage because who could ever afford a theater piece with 26 vets? But we have a good number of them, and she confronts them, and they confront her, and it's quite an evening.
And it's in the more intimate space at the Edgemoor, which can
yes.
only fuel this production because you're right there.
Yeah, it works very well. Initially, we opened it as a workshop because it's a brand new play, and all plays need to go through a process of development. And it was so successful that we extended it. So. We're going to play through November now, and you know, we are constantly tweaking it. We're working on it. Changing.
Finessing
my
it,
my whole
yeah.
costume and hair and everything changed this week. You know, I mean, things like we just keep, because that's, this is what you want, is an opportunity to get all the people you also respect in to help them get their, you know, get their feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, we get a standing ovation every night, I'll put it that way.
That's great. You touched on something which I think we should point out to a potential audience that will be coming in, because this is one of those things, the Jane Fonda and the whole quote-unquote Hanoi Jane thing, that everyone thinks they know. They know something about it, and they've all, and it's such a polarizing thing, and people have such strong opinions about it. But this production is not based on that event. It's this follow-up meeting in Waterbury, Connecticut, where they were going to film. They were going to film Stanley and Iris.
Yes,
and there
was
a protest.
She was about to film Stanley and Iris with Robert De Niro there, and some war vets, not necessarily Vietnam vets, but war vets were protesting her filming there. It was actually the mayor of the town at that time, and it was, you know, anyway. She felt, at Robert De Niro's suggestion, interestingly enough, that the best thing to do would be to meet with the vets. And so a meeting was arranged by a vet organizing a bunch of Vietnam vets to meet with her in a church in Waterbury, Connecticut. And she did, and it was a four-hour meeting. A lot of tears were shed on both sides, a lot of understanding. It was cathartic. Some guys came around, some guys didn't, but everybody was changed for the better, because when you can get into communication about something and communicate both sides that thoroughly, you come to greater understanding.
Right.
And so the play, the message of the play is meant to be healing and to get the facts straight. And we do that. My husband went to Hanoi. He retraced her footsteps with all of her guides and translators and he asked independent people. He talked to tons of vets and the POWs that she met with there. He talked to them. I mean, guys, obviously they're not still there, but I mean, the guys that were POWs at that time. And he, as he says, it's the triangulation of the truth. You get three different individuals at least to tell you about a specific event, time, location, blah, blah. You talk to them separately.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, you can pretty much define what actually occurred from moment to moment, and that's what he did.
What's the Kurosawa film that does that? There's a Kurosawa film where it's they tell the story over the course of the film, three different perspectives, and then the audience is left to sort of figure out. And of course, I can't get the internet in front of me. I should look it up.
Yeah.
Now, what were there transcripts of this event? Is it just a dramatization of what might have taken place? Did she talk about it in interview after the fact? I'm curious about the source
material. There are no transcripts.
Okay.
There was no press there. And no, it is not a recounting of what was said in the meeting. Terry used it as a vehicle to tell the story of the Vietnam War.
Okay.
Both sides, from the vet's point of view, from the peace movement point of view, and what Jane actually did. And it's multimedia. We have footage that has never been seen before from Hanoi. We have, you know, footage of Johnson and Nixon speaking and Walter Cronkite, and I mean, amazing footage on that comes in and out of the show that Jane did with a bunch of activists called the FTA. We have all this amazing footage, and it comes in and out of our drama on the stage.
Oh,
we have
wow.
a big screen, so it's like Frost Nixon.
Yes,
it's multimedia.
Nice. No.
It's very interesting.
Is she aware of it? Has she been to see it yet?
No, I don't know that she'll come to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Terry talked to her at length,
mm-hmm.
and when she realized there was no way to stop him from doing it, she said, okay, well, you should talk to this guy and this guy, and he did all those people, and then all a bunch of other people that vets recommended he talk to, etc. And but no, she hasn't seen it, and that's fine. She says, look, you have no idea what you're getting into. Are you sure you want to do this?
Which is why we brought her here today. Janaine?
Janaine?
You like that?
Janaine.
No, this is Janaine Fienda. We got the name wrong. We just brought the wrong actress in. We should tell people how to get tickets to this, Mike.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is at Edgemar Center for the Arts. That's 2437 Main Street in Santa Monica. And it's playing through December 4th, actually. Reservations 310-392-7327. That's 310-392-7327. And for online ticketing, it's edgemarcenter.org. That's edgemarcenter.org, not .com. Always feel a need to point that out.
Yeah.
So it's actually through the beginning of December.
Extension, you said.
Yes. This coming weekend was supposed to be our last weekend, but I mean, we could play it as long as we want. It's just I have to decide. It's a big chunk. We want to carry the play on further and have, you know, we're going to continue to develop it. It's I think I want to take Christmas off.
Would be nice to be with your husband and your family, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
One of the things that Michael and I love about doing this show is that we get to learn other things that people are up to, aside from the obvious things that they are well known for. And one of the things that popped out from your bio material here is the Artists for Human Rights in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was wondering if you would share some thoughts on that and what some of the accomplishments or goals of that organization, along with Planned Parenthood.
I did
a poster for Planned Parenthood in 1980.
I was on the poster,
yes. Yeah. I was a pregnant guy on the poster, and the whole tagline was, "Would you be as careful if it were you who got pregnant?" And I was this high school kid, and I was all pregnant, and it went out, and it was a very, it was sort of like, you know, an awareness thing.
Very
and,
clever.
Yeah, my father was just delighted at that one, for some reason. But the Artist for Human Rights, how did that come about?
Well, you know, I've always had an intense interest in human rights, obviously working with Planned Parenthood, even in the early 90s. There are things you naturally gravitate to, and I felt that artists really can change things. You know, a film, a song can change people's hearts and minds overnight. If you can reach people and masses of people quickly, you can change their whole viewpoint about a country, about a group. It's amazing. And I felt that we all have a responsibility to help raise awareness of everyone's human rights all over the world. I've always felt that way. And I thought forming an organization where artists can work together, where we can encourage artists to be more vocal about human rights, find the issue that's near and dear to them, and support it with their art, is a great thing, in that it is needed today more than ever when you look at the state of the world and how close the world is becoming because of the internet. I've just always cared about that. So in 2006, I formed this organization, and we have amazing speaker series, salons with amazing people coming to talk to film, directors, producers, writers, activists, actors, where we've done concerts. We've had art exhibits, human rights art exhibits all over the world, and which also, you know, the Fonda play is a human rights issue.
Sure.
It really is.
Sure.
And so her story really resonated with me big time. And that's why I got involved that too. But yeah, Artists for Human Rights is artistsforhumanrights.org.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have to put that on our website as well.
Definitely,
yeah.
Yes.
Great.
And you've been doing that for 20 years or more, right?
Well, the organization I formed in 2006.
Your interest in
human rights. Yeah. And it probably did start with Planned Parenthood. Ms. Magazine named me as one of the women of the year at that time. And I was one of the very first people to speak out for pro-choice, one of the very first celebrities to speak out. And, it's about human rights.
And you got a humanitarian award from Mayor Vera Rigosa for the work with that. That's incredible.
And there's an organization called the Global Action Awards, which gave me a lovely award last year as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
well
great.
Deserved, I am sure. I have to ask you something that I asked you actually before we went on the air, and that was saying when you walked into the studio today, I looked at your beautiful face and saw your mother, because I was such a fan of hers.
Yeah.
Marjorie Lord, ladies and gentlemen, is the mother of Ann Archer, and was the wife on Make Room for Daddy.
Right, the Danny Thomas show.
Yes, the Danny Thomas show. Danny.
Right, yeah.
And I used to, as I said to you, I used to want her mom to be my mom, in all due respect to my mother, and I wanted Danny to be my dad, in all due respect to my father. I guess it was just like the perfect kind of combination.
Yeah,
and they weren't too perfect, though.
Yeah, no. It wouldn't be any comedy.
He was always getting in hot water from his wife. So.
I wanted to be Kitten.
Aren't you Kitten, though? Really, Jim, when you think about it.
I did sort of turn out to be a Kitten.
See, oddly enough, I wanted Archie and Edith as my parents, which is sort of tragic when they were an improvement.
Wow, really?
I'm kidding. Paul. I did have them for grandparents, though. Archie and Edith were definitely my grandparents.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, oh, yes. Yeah, like cut from the same mold, yeah.
Oh, my. He has an interesting family.
Yeah. And they're here, too, along with Janine Fonda, who we mentioned earlier.
Fionda.
Michael, should we do our art before we get back to talking to Jim and also continue with Miss Archer? Should we do our arts calendar, or should we?
If you like, we have another couple minutes.
All right.
I'd like to talk to Anne a little bit more.
All right, let's do that. We'll hold off on the arts calendar.
You've done some great television work as well, and Ghost Whisperer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Playing her mom.
And The L Word, the very provocative series on Showtime.
Uh-huh.
Anything in particular on television that I remember a recent series that you did, Privileged, which I actually kind of liked for some reason.
I loved
the girls and your character with them as well.
Yeah, it was a great project. Yeah.
Boy, and what a beautifully done show. I mean, they spared no expense on that, did they?
Yeah, well, Rena Mamoon, who, you know, started with the Gilmore Girls, she produced and wrote and created it, and she was amazing, and it was a great show, and it was the CW network, and they were struggling to find their legs, and shows that already had a big market value abroad, like Melrose Place or 90212, they could pre-sell.
Mm-hmm.
And our show was a new idea. And it was just finances, because it was really a fine show. And it was hard, I think, for the network to make a decision whether to continue or not, because it was really good.
And right as it was getting so interesting, then they let it go.
I know that.
It was a shame.
Yeah, it comes down to money.
Yeah, it always does. Speaking of money, for just a brief moment, I want to bring this up. This whole Kim Kardashian thing. Did you hear about this today?
No, it just happened.
I'm sorry. Paul and I discussed this a little bit before.
Kim
Kardashian divorces today her husband of 72 days.
No way.
No way.
And it was what did the wedding cost?
Not what the wedding cost. It was the amount of money, the income that the two of them got from their relationship and getting married through those 72 days. If you break it down, each of them has been receiving $250,000 a day. They raked in $18 million off of that wedding.
Oh, you mean what, promotional things for the wedding? What was the revenue generator?
You know, whether it was People Magazine buying the exclusive, or one of the entertainment news programs buying the exclusive, or whatever was exclusive, and they had plenty of exclusives.
Yeah.
That was what they made off of that wedding.
They should use the money and buy an island live on it.
They should give it to charity.
They should give it to charity. Yes,
they should. Human rights.
Yes.
Yeah, give it to human rights.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I think that's a little dicey for me. You know, it smells a little scammy to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And disappointing that the media eats it up like that, too. Yeah, what are the odds, right? Good Lord. Didn't mean to go off track there, but...
No. You looked like you had something in your craw.
I did. It's bugged me ever since I came here.
You had a Kardashian in your craw. Forgo the obvious joke there.
No, I saw it right before
that's
I came.
That's ruined my Halloween.
Did it?
That has ruined my Halloween.
I don't mind the shirt. It's the stuffed parrot that's throwing me. Can you take that off?
I wish I had an eye patch. I'm thinking about stealing this little filter thing for an eye patch.
Did I ever tell you the story about my friend Sarah and her parrot?
No.
May I tell you this?
No,
this is one of the greatest parrot stories ever. And I know you're saying, I've heard all the good parrot stories. But her sister trained and kept parrots for, I hope I have this right, because sometimes her husband listens, and I hope I have the story right, so he'll have to call in and correct me if it's wrong. But they had a parrot, and parrots remember what to say by where they were when they heard it. So if you have a parrot that is by the door, it will do a doorbell sound or say hello or whatever. And this particular parrot used to fly onto the kitchen table and eat the nuts out of the bowl on the table and would be reprimanded for doing that. So she and her husband are on the other side of the house, and they just hear, Petey, no. Petey, bad bird. Petey, stop it. Stop. They go to the kitchen, and there's this parrot just eating the nuts, going, Petey, Petey, no. He like gave himself
oh
up.
Oh my gosh,
that was absolutely
great.
Hysterical.
That's hilarious.
Kevin Tice from Chicago, please call up and let me know if I have that story right. He doesn't listen live. He usually listens to the podcast, so maybe we'll get a call.
That's
back.
Very funny.
I think I have it right. I hope I have it right. Anyway,
very funny.
Shall we pay some bills, Michael?
Yes, indeed.
The live arts calendar for this week, and then we have a couple of reviews. You
we
saw
did.
A couple of shows this week.
Yeah.
In Moses Supposes, Cookie and Marvin Green's adult children, Cece and Raymond, have returned to their southern Jewish home to throw their parents a 35th wedding anniversary party, but everyone has chosen the same weekend to reveal their own surprises, and the ensuing Mishigoth turns the celebration upside down. The laughs are nonstop as the Green family discovers that after 35 years, maybe they don't know each other quite as well as they thought they did. Just as Moses supposes his toes are roses, the entire Green family supposes erroneously. Moses Supposes stars Karen Black and plays through December 4th at the Zephyr Theater. So for further information about any of the productions in our live arts calendar, you can visit stateoftheartsla.com. We also suggest you drop in at performingartslive.com, where you can search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the week.
Indeed.
So what did you see, Michael?
You know,
what shows
had,
did you see this week before we get
of,
to Jim?
I had the pleasure of going to the opening of Come Fly Away at the Pantages Theater, a conceptual piece of rich entertainment brought to life by choreographer-director Twyla Tharp, who has once again paired dance and the vocals of Frank Sinatra for the delight of audiences from coast to coast. It finally has landed, Paul, at the Pantages Theater, and that was opening night Tuesday, October 25th, with a thrillingly talented cast of 14 dancers on stage and a full orchestra behind them. Such Sinatra classics as Stardust, You Make Me Feel So Young, Let's Face the Music and Dance, That's Life, and the chairman of the board's signature tune, My Way, were only part of the wisely chosen 27 songs featured during this 80-minute one-act musical that peeks into the romance of four different couples during one evening in a swank nightclub. With particular praise for the remarkable dancers and the entire creative team, Come Fly Away is an intoxicating marriage of pure harmony and wedded bliss. For tickets and information, ladies and gentlemen, please visit BroadwayLA.org.
80 minutes. That's
80 minutes.
That's lean for a musical.
And it only plays through November 6th, so it's a short run, a two-week run.
80 minutes, no intermission.
But it's all dance. That's
it's all dance.
It doesn't have book. It's dance, dance. I saw it in New York when it opened in New York. It's
Did you?
Phenomenal.
Oh, yeah?
I'm so glad to hear you say that.
Oh my God.
No, I said lean as a positive thing. Because I like to see that because then you know it's just going to be cream of the crop and non-indulgent.
Yeah. Now, conversely, a try-hard I Think I Can little engine revival of Gabriel Grigo's and Second Line production Sweet Charity opened last October 28th, that was last Friday, at the Knightsbridge Theater in Los Angeles. And though well-fueled by Robert Mara's thoughtful direction, Tanya Pasek's super creative and well-executed choreography, and a four-piece band under the solid musical direction of James Lent, the talented cast was led by the charming but miscast and vocally challenged Brooke Seguin in the title role. While Miss Seguin's acting ability did indeed get her through the production, her vocal ability and or inability, as it were, did not, thus weakening the otherwise star turn in Cy Coleman and Dorothy Field's show-stopping numbers written specially for Neil Simon's sympathetic yet soulfully wide-eyed Charity Hope Valentine. The production was further impaired by a messy, blah, and ironically uncredited set design, coupled with uninspired lighting by J.C. Gafford. And however, how often do I ever have a review like this?
You don't.
Really?
You don't.
Yeah, I was disappointed in that aspect of it. However, David Schifaletti held his own with costume designs that were mostly well-conceived and or crafted, and in the midst of a hard-working and talented ensemble, standout acting and vocal performances included those by co-stars Leslie Stevens as the dance hall's hardened but lovable Nikki, Leslie's from Broadway, Elvira Barjau, also from Broadway, as the brash, forward Helene, and Adam Silver's simply perfect performance as Charity's nerdly, neurotic love interest, Oscar. Sweet Charity continues at the Knightbridge Theater in Silver Lake, California through November 13th. And for tickets and information, contact secondlineproductions.com.
So it sounds like there are nuggets in there.
Yes, there are. No, indeed there are. Yeah. It's just that those particular things were a little kind of taken aback. This is a beautiful musical that should be performed in a certain way. It wasn't to my liking, but that's not to say that other people wouldn't feel differently, perhaps. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for that. I'm glad that you're able to get on and see shows. I have not been able to, and I'm just really starting to feel it. But
you've been busy doing one of these.
Yes, and just now exhaling from that.
That's right.
So, can you stick around? Would you mind staying with us for the remainder while we chat with Jim? Because I'm sure you'll have a lot of comments on what he says. And
he's very long-winded,
We'd be more comfortable. We'd be more comfortable if you'd stay.
Because of the gay pirate shirt, right?
Yes, it's the shirt. Our next guest forged one of the most unique partnerships in the history of daytime television with Tammy Faye Baker-Messner on the Jim, Jay, and Tammy Faye Show. And for 3 seasons, he was the upper right square on the Hollywood Squares. He even had a platonic relationship with Elf. He performed the role of Wilbur Turnblad for 2 years in both the Broadway production and the first national tour of Hairspray, and is here to talk about switching roles and genders. Please welcome a good friend of State of the Arts and an all-around great guy, Mr. Jim J. Bullock.
Yeah.
Or actually, I think we could do you one better.
Theme to CSI.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not a Who song. Let's remember the origin.
But it is the opening for CSI.
It's also the opening for CSI, but it's primarily a great rock and roll song.
Sort of like What Death Happened on the Stage Saturday.
That's like saying, that's like Rhapsody in Blue. Yes. Well, that's a theme for American Airlines, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Remember what it was for. It is.
Yeah.
Rhapsody in Blue is a theme for American Airlines. So doing Hairspray again.
I am. Hairspray has just been so wonderful to me.
And you said that doing the Broadway production was like a dream come true for you.
Yes, and I love the show. I absolutely think the show is about as perfect of a musical as there is. And it's just got, it's got a wonderful message to boot.
Were you a fan of the film before it became a musical, the John Waters film?
Not really.
Really?
I mean, I liked it, but I didn't obsess over it.
I asked that because a number of people have said that they didn't care for the film, but the musical was this whole new...
No, the film is fine. I mean, I didn't... It was, a little film in the 80s, and so it kind of came and went. And then when I heard they were doing a musical back in the early, 2001, 2000... I was like, really? Oh, how are they going to do that? It'll never work. It'll never work.
It'll never work.
That's what I know. Thank God I'm not God.
So you played Wilbur Turnblad.
I did.
Played the husband, Tracy's dad.
I started my journey with it in 2002 when Harvey was leaving the show. I auditioned for Edna. They brought me in as the male authority, which is a multiple character role, playing Mr. Pinky, the principal, Mr. Spritzer. And then I went to the dad and did the dad, and always wanted to do the mom, but never really had a chance. And finally, this last summer, I was cast as I got a chance to audition for her and did it in Denver. And now I'm doing it here at the Carpenter Center for Musical Theater West.
Oh, man. They're 59th?
One of our 59th season.
Yeah.
In one of our beautiful theaters, 1,100-seat theater.
Beautiful.
Perfect size.
Giant.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Long Beach.
Yeah.
And one of the most successful regional musical theater companies in Southern California.
Well, I've never done anything for them. This is my first time to do something for them. And their productions are stunning.
Yeah, they're top notch.
Really?
We talk about a lot of their productions here, and it's always, the production values are just really staggering.
The talent, their caliber of talent is, boy.
Well, they have you.
Oh, I was going to say that, but then I fell into a little coma.
Just read from the cards. Jim, would you just read from the cards?
I can't read.
Did you ever play opposite with John Pignette at all? Was he ever in the production at the time you were?
No, he was on tour, but he was not the Edna when I was on tour. Okay. And then he went to New York, but I went to New York after he left.
John Pignette. Fabulous. John Pignette is a brilliant stand-up comic. He's a great, great stand-up. Mm-hmm. And I was watching his stand-up. He's a hefty fellow. Mm-hmm. He's actually lost a lot of weight. He was upwards around 400 and something, and he lost over 100 pounds.
Good for
more
him.
Than that
God
now,
bless
actually
him.
Probably around 2. He had a great joke about it. He said, "I lost 100 pounds," and everyone said, "We could really see it in your face." It's like, how big was my head? It's like, that's John. His head's the size of a hubcap.
Oh,
we don't
no.
tell people. But he was talking about the experience of playing Edna, and he just, you know, not having eyebrows, and they, you know, because he 8 shows a week, and you know, and he's not going to soap over his eyebrows, and he does YouTube it. He does a stand up bit about
playing
Edna.
I have YouTubed him, watching him, and you know,
very very funny.
YouTube is a great device to see people's work and steal, you know, go on. That's fabulous. I'm taking that. You know, I mean, it's like, you know.
Oh yeah. I'm always curious, though, when you do a show, first of all, that you're so familiar with, having done it as much as you, it has to be almost like an unlearning curve when you're playing a different role in the same show. When you hear those lines that you said so many times, but it's in a character opposite you, that's got to throw you as a performer.
Yeah, but my mind is like a colander. It just, you know, only big chunks stay, you know. I mean, it really is sad. So quickly as I learn something, I don't know if you're like that. I forget it. But the song, and if you put song and choreography together, then it's kind of embedded in there a little deeper. You
okay.
know? So Timeless, doing Wilbur in the song Timeless, in the do with the male part. I'm an amphibian, right? Because I'm now male and female. But I really, it was a switch for me. You got that?
No, I was.
Frogs are the same, you know. They
androgynous.
Can, they're,
yeah.
They're both sexes.
Right.
So.
Right.
You know,
and seahorses, the male carries the eggs. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In a small satchel.
And you know what praying mantises do.
Is that the official sign for praying mantises? I wish we were on the web.
After sex, they bite the head of the male
off
and they kill him.
Did you know that, Anne?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Disgusting.
How did we get from Edna Turnblad to praying mantises biting the head of the male?
I want to play that. Let's play that clip back and find out exactly how many seconds it took from, you know, I'm an amphibian.
Oh my
gosh. And did you know that after sex, the praying mantis bites the head off him. Yes.
It's pretty funny. I don't even know
is
what
that
your question
one of
who
those,
are you?
Is that one
Where
of those big chunks that stayed in the colander?
That is the chunk. I remember the oddest things. I don't remember the important things in life, but I can tell you that a female...
I am the same way. It's one
true.
Of the reasons... That's why I'm a huge Tom Waits fan, because Tom Waits has a new album out, which I'm delighted about. But it's just that minutia, you know, that I used to love things like the Book of List and the People's Almanac and all that, those unusual facts, and you know, like the great 1910 molasses flood in Boston. You know, there's a molasses flood that was like 10
really?
Feet. Yeah, a distillery blew up and like, you know.
And you remember that?
Yeah, useless shit stuck in my head. Can't remember my own phone number, but I remember the 1910 Boston molasses flood. And I knew exactly what you were talking about when you held up the symbol for praying mantis. I was thinking, you know, they bite the heads off after sex.
That's right.
That's
right.
All I needed.
I don't think it's a bad
kill.
Idea.
We would. We'd kill at charades. We just have to hold a hand up and we'd go, nuclear disarmament. Hold a finger up. Cyndi Lauper. We'd have it.
I would want
it's
to be
gift.
On your team.
It's a gift. It's a gift.
I would certainly want to be on your team.
Pictionary. Yeah, Pictionary. We
well,
would kick
Jim,
ass.
You're working with some great people. You're working with Barry Pearl from
Barry.
Broadway.
Yes.
Barry. Fantastic, Barry
He's
Pearl.
Fantastic.
And David Engel, also from Broadway.
David's great.
Yeah.
It is. It's a great, wonderful cast. You know, Tracy Lohr and just...
And the young Derek Klena.
Derek Klena, who
Derek
we had
Klena
on.
Derek
Klena
is our
yes.
friend.
Yes.
Playing Link Larkin.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand him dancing, and we know he sings beautifully, but I didn't know he danced quite as well as I understand he does. In this
Yeah, production. He dances very well. But, you know, I mean, it just reminds me of how inadequate I was. Now I'm old, and so it doesn't matter. No one expects anything. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, put a fat suit on, you know. But But I was so, how I ever did anything or got anywhere in this business is truly, it's, you know, bite my head off.
Well, let's address the fact that you're talented and ridiculously funny.
Well, you know, that could help a little.
Is that okay? Is that the card you wanted me to read, or is there anything else?
That could be my eulogy.
You said Derek Clement, too. He's prepping for Carrie, right?
He's prepping to leave this. As soon as he finishes in Hairspray, he goes to New York and goes into rehearsal for the off. It's starting off Broadway, the musical of Carrie, the motion picture. This is the second time it's tried to find its life, but it's going to be in rehearsal through December, and they open January 31st, and with the hope of moving it in down the street onto Broadway.
Was that like 20 years ago?
The Carrie, the musical, yeah.
With Betty Buckley.
Was it?
I don't think it was 20 years ago. No.
No, no, the musical or the film?
No, the musical. Betty Buckley was the mother.
Because Betty Buckley's in the film. She's the gym teacher.
She gets cut in half. Yeah, but then in the Broadway musical, she played, once again, useless.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. She played the crazy Piper Laurie role.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Piper Laurie in the original. Mm. She was just
fantastic.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
Just squirm-inducingly good.
Yeah.
I just saw that.
And the film?
Yeah. It just holds up so well.
Oh, yeah. Because it's just scary. One of those... It was like those scary movies, those made-for-TV movies from the 70s that just really got, like, Let's Scare Jessica to Death. And there was a great one with George C. Scott called The Changeling. Mm. Those movies from the 70s that were just like those Saturday afternoon things. The Changeling is terrifying.
Well, terrifying and thrilling, and much like Fatal Attraction. I mean, my God, I remember sitting in that theater and being so scared.
Yeah.
For you and you know.
And no gore. And no gore.
Yeah.
That's the really
cool part.
That's the thing.
Going that direction, yeah.
That was so beautifully done.
Said that, it's like you don't, if you put a bomb under a table and everyone at the table knows that they're stuck to it and there's a bomb and they all panic and scream. And what suspense is putting the bomb under the table and having no one in the scene know that it's there.
Yeah.
And that's the suspenseful thing. You know, I just thought that was well put. Before we forget, Michael, let's tell people how to get tickets to see Hairspray.
Indeed.
Do you want to or should I?
I'll give it a whirl. It opened just this past Friday evening, October 28th, ladies and gentlemen. It plays through Saturday, November 12th. And, through Sunday, November 13th, forgive me, at 2 p.m. they close with a matinee. Tickets are modestly priced, and they start at $20. You can't get any better than that.
You can't beat that with a stick. $20.
No, they start at $20, yeah. Oh. I mean, that's fantastic. 1,100-seat theater.
They start at $20. You mean there's one seat at
$20? Well, it's a bring-your-own chair.
And it's outside.
It's a folding chair. It's a space.
It's a jump seat.
But you know what? The theater is... Have you ever been to the Carpenter Center?
No.
It's very beautiful, and it's there really is not a bad seat because it's such a broad,
so wide. Yeah.
Wide, you know.
Right. No.
Right. So to purchase tickets for Hairspray... at Musical Theater West. You can do that online, musical.org.
How did they secure that domain?
I don't know. Big Bucks got that one.
Musical.org.
Or call them on the telephone, 562 area code 856-1999, extension 4. Once again, 856-1999, extension 4 in the 562 area code. Musical Theater box office in person. You can go right there, right down in the heart of Long Beach at on the University of California at Long Beach campus is where the theater is located. Beautiful spot.
Beautiful.
You smell that great ocean air coming in there, as you probably do when you go to work down at Santa Monica.
Absolutely. There.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely treat yourself to either that play, or you can also go see Ann Archer, Paul.
Yes.
You How about both?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be quite the matinee. I mean, quite the double bill, I should say.
It would be a double bill.
Yes. That is Jane Fonda in the court of Hairspray.
Jane Fonda in a fat suit.
Jane Fonda
in a fat suit.
Praying mantis. Jane Fonda, The Court of Public Opinion. It is a world premiere, and it's at Edgemar Center for the Arts, and that's 2437 Main Street in Santa Monica. And that is playing through December 4th, and reservations 310-392-7327 at edgemarcenter.org. See this show when you have the opportunity to see it in as intimate a space as the Edgemar Black Box space.
Well, I can certainly say this about both of their shows, is that Don Grigware, our friend Don Grigware from Broadway World, raved about your show.
Yeah.
Raved about your show. Mm-hmm. And also wrote me a little note this morning because he knew they were going to be on the show, and he said, tell Jim I thought it was the best Hairspray he had ever seen, including our Hollywood Bowl version this past summer.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Really?
So.
And have you ever seen Hairspray, the musical?
Oh, sure.
I never have. Mm-hmm. I never have.
Really?
Oh. Sorry. Get out of here. Get out of here.
Now, we talked about hitting the table. I'm going to go see this
under
one.
Under the table.
He's got candy to give out.
Yes. Yes. Got, no, but I'm actually going to try to see both of them. Well, we're actually trying to arrange a little outing to the Edgemar because I did a show there earlier in the year called The Flea and Her Ear. And Mark Gadbois is in your show, who
right.
is in Flea and Her Ear. So a bunch of us flea-bitten cast members are trying to arrange a get-together where we can go over, and it's a perfect opportunity to. So I look forward to seeing
great.
That.
And, are you Sunday night?
We're Sunday night, 7 o'clock. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you Sunday night?
I am Sunday night, but our last Sunday night is not... I mean, I have a Sunday night free, is what I'm trying to say. I would love to come see it. I
good.
Really, really, really
good.
Want to come
we
see it.
We would love it.
Well, you have time before she closes. It goes
I know.
Later. Yeah.
Could mm-hmm. you go to the end of November?
Yeah. We don't play over Thanksgiving weekend, but we play the following weekend, and our last show is Sunday, December 4th.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Be there.
Be there.
Be there.
Be there.
And I'm going to see his show this weekend, so I'll be thrilled, and I'm going to come and see your show before
great,
it closes.
Absolutely.
Great. So we have to...
I have to drive to Phoenix.
That's
the life that I have.
Wow.
You see plays, I drive through the desert. Yes. But I find that drive very therapeutic.
You could always review something in Phoenix.
I could.
You
know? I could. That's
take
a good
father,
thought.
Take your father, go to the theater. We have a little
yeah,
cultural
branch
exchange.
Out. Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's got a strip club right across the street from his house called the Candy Store. We could try that.
He owns?
No, he doesn't own
oh,
it.
Oh, your just, father owns a strip
we're
club?
We're not all gangsters, Michael. Just because we're Italian doesn't mean we're involved in unsavory activities.
Is there a pole in your living room?
No, he's actually Swedish. Lady! Anyway.
Good Lord, we have to get
oh,
to,
yes,
to tell us.
To.
Maybe Anne might grace
if,
us with
if
a story,
if Anne elects
too.
To chime in,
yeah.
she can. But
we're not putting any pressure on
we're
you.
Always, we always
what?
Like to ask the, ask
oh,
the guests
for God's sake.
About their
most
worst onstage,
yeah.
embarrassing onstage nightmare thing to happen performing. On stage. You told us last time you were here, you told us about something that you were doing, and you were advised by an actress... I don't know.
It was on a film.
It was on a film that you were just like, they were like, tone it way down, tone
yeah,
it way
yeah,
down.
Yeah.
It was on Blake Edwards' Switch, yeah.
It was on Blake Edwards'
Switch, yes.
Okay.
That was Jo Beth Williams.
Okay, it was Jo Beth Williams.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just remember the story being funny the way you told it. And,
but, you want me to tell that story?
No, just any. Anything. But you mentioned something about, we were asking you about Spaceballs, and you were saying that it was just... very difficult.
Well, I know when I was originally my first run with Hairspray on Broadway, the Mel Authority in Good Morning Baltimore, I played the Flasher, and he just runs across stage, and you're in a range coat, you know, and you don't have anything on but underwear, and you're mic packing obviously, but you do that to Tracy,
right.
you know, just real quick, boom, boom, off. It's in the song, you know.
You're facing upstage for it.
Yeah, facing yeah. upstage. Okay. No one even knows it's who it is or anything. But my last show, I'll probably never come back to Broadway ever. So why not? So I was totally naked. So I had nothing on. So I ran up and I flashed. Well, and at that moment, the scrim goes up and it's the whole cast. And they're like, good morning. But then everyone's looking at me. But then the audience starts laughing. And I realize... that the jacket is vented up to my mid-back, so my 50-year-old ass is hanging out for all of the Neil Simon to see. But they brought me back.
That's great.
So those would be the Jim J. Buttocks.
Yes, that's it. That's it.
That was the tagline, wasn't it? It was Hairspray, come see Jim J. Buttocks' 50-year-old ass.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's it. That's what sold the tickets. That's what closed the show.
Oh, that's funny. That's sort of like Michael's. Well,
what?
I can't tell Michael's tale.
Oh, that. Yeah. Yes. Don't bring that up.
No, we've talked
about
it.
Well, I don't know if you have time, but
yes,
I actually.
Yes, we do.
It's very funny because I do have a story, and I wasn't going to tell it because I thought, no, it's maybe not in good taste. But since he's told that story.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's right on the same thing.
Wait, I'm going to get the vodka. Yeah. I'll be right back.
Everything is in good taste, too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was doing The Graduate in London. And as you know, Mrs. Robinson in the play, she comes out in a towel and opens the towel and is completely nude.
Right.
So every night, you know, I have to come out completely nude. Of course, I was, you know, working out, keeping good shape, blah, blah. And it was okay after the first few times, you know, I got kind of, okay, I can deal with this. And you stand in a certain place and the lighting's perfect and you open the towel and there you are. And one night, I open the towel and I drop it and I'm standing there and I think, just kind of feels different. Doesn't feel as breezy down there as it usually does. And I realize I've forgotten to take off my underwear.
Oh.
So I had the pants on. I had them off. I was supposed to have them off, but I had them on. I came back, and everyone backstage said, what happened? I forgot to take off my underwear.
It's one of those things that's never been said. You won't believe this. I went on stage and I forgot to take my underwear off.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's just the reverse of what you normally fear.
Oh
my God. I love it wasn't quite as breezy.
That was it. Doesn't feel the same. Something's off. What is it?
That's great.
Lord. Oh, my.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Thank you so much.
For both of you.
Both
just
you.
A delight.
Coming in. What a joy it was to spend Halloween with you. Halloween 2011. Here you are.
Yes.
Paul, always a joy to have you on the show.
The same here, right back at you. And we will have all of the information about these two productions that our lovely guests were nice enough to share with us on their days off.
Get out there and see the live arts, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, on stateoftheartsla.com. And we look forward to chatting with you next week.
Absolutely. On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk.